This is Crossroads, the Get Religion podcast.
A headline and an op-ed in the New York Times. The headline, California joins growing national effort to ban smartphone use in schools. And the op-ed, Surgeon General, why I'm calling for a warning label on social media platforms. Is there a religion angle in the story about young people and their smartphones? Greetings and welcome to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow on Communications and Culture at St. Constantine College in Houston, Texas. He writes Rational Sheep, a Substack newsletter for faith and mass media. He's author of the National On Religion column for the Andrews McNeil Universal Syndicate. And for two decades, he led the GetReligion.org website. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So obviously, the smartphones and mental health debate is a big issue. What makes it a religion issue?
That's one of those questions that I've been studying this or related topics to this for almost 50 years. But it's still an expression of a very old question. Let me walk you back to the mid-70s when a secular Jewish writer and researcher in New York City wrote a book called The Plug-In Drug. And that was about addiction to television. She's written several revised versions of it. And in that book, or one of the follow-ups in one of the revisions, she used an image that I think is an answer to your question. And she said, what parents, and at Rational Sheep I keep saying, pastors, parents, teachers, and counselors. Although maybe we should make that parents, pastors, teachers, and counselors. Here's the image that should be relevant to them. She said, you've got to stop thinking about technology as like some sort of box that you walk in and you sit it in your house. You put it in the living room or you put it in a child's room. She said, instead, you should think of that technology not as a box, but a door. It's literally a door through the wall of your house out into the wider world. And you're concerned not just about the box, you're concerned about what walks through the door. And she used the image, and this is like early cable TV era, she used the image, we're allowing our children to be raised, talking about using television as a babysitter. We're allowing our children to be raised by people that if they showed up on our doorstep, we would call 911. Now, if that was television, or even cable television, in a book that she was researching in the mid-70s and was published in 1977, where are we now, nearly 50 years later, with smartphones, iPads, computers, digital screens? Not just one of those boxes is in our house. The typical house might contain 15, 10 of those boxes in one form or another that are digital doors to the internet. And so the minute you start talking about a smartphone, to raise the image, since it's so personal and it's right there in your hand and it's so easy to keep secret, it's not just a doorway into your house. It's a doorway directly into the eyes, the mind, the heart, and the soul of a child or everybody. So the minute you put it that way, what's walking through the doorway of the internet? If you're walking around with the internet in your pocket, what's coming through the door? And this is where I think you begin to hear issues that the church really can't avoid in this day and age. Obviously, the big word right now is mental health. But at the very least, you're looking at cyberbullying, potentially. You're looking at eating disorders. You're looking at the role of smartphones in somewhere between a 500 and 800% increase in gender dysphoria activity in different parts of the Western world, especially in girls. You're looking at video game addictions, which predominantly affect young boys and men, and that began to uptick ahead of the smartphone revolution in, when did Steve Jobs do the great sermon on the iPhone? That's something like 2007, 2008. So before that, the key, according to Jonathan Haidt's Anxious Generation book, the key to that was multiplayer gaming, which tends to put young males in a room with their door closed all night long in many, many cases. He reports growing evidence of parents literally with boys that live after college, live in their basement, that they're leaving food by their door. Then you have, obviously, coming related to that, pornography. Then you get into physical effects linked to sleep deprivation. And then I'll go one more before I stop this list, because I could go on. Then you begin to look at the broken social skills and face-to-face networks that are being replaced by digital screen life. And several people now have written books linking that to the problem our culture has in forming marriages, forming new families, and ultimately in having children, the fertility crisis, as well as raising those children. At Rational Sheep, in one of the very first posts, I noted that I think I could run a online newsletter just on the subject of smartphones and publish one or two items a day. That's how fast all of this is coming to a head, and how much information is coming out, and how many changes are hopefully just ahead, but just how big this crisis has become. And I find it interesting, we can come back to this, for why the church is struggling with it. It's so interesting to me that we need an atheist from the faculty of New York University to be the point on the spear of this issue, when there are so many moral, cultural, and religious issues that can be attached to it. And I'm referring to Jonathan Haidt, who is a self-professed atheist, but dedicated a chapter of his book to the religious implications of this change in identity and how identities are formed. So I think that's the key answer to your question. People who are interested in the religion angles of the story, and I would include journalists here, but certainly parents, pastors, teachers, and counselors, they got to stop thinking of technology as some sort of new fangled box or gadget in a home or in some person's life, and you have to think of it instead as a door. The minute you think of it as a door, everything changes.
Maybe I'm just confabulating a memory here, Terry, but was there not a TV commercial that was recorded by, I believe it was Steve Allen, the original Tonight Show host, in the 70s, I think it was. And I just remember him talking about ironically talking about the dangers of letting your kids watch too much television, and ended with this tagline, which was just, turn it off. Do you recall that commercial?
I don't. I pick up the Tonight Show, other than watching it on YouTube, I pick it up with Johnny Carson. But Allen did a whole lot of work, Steve Allen did a whole lot of work on what he saw as some of the negative effects of other forms of popular culture that I know of. His satires of popular music were just absolutely vicious. And, of course, he was a jazz musician and a songwriter himself. But, you know, that sounds totally like him to me. And at this point, I don't think we can turn off the role of the internet. It's too important to the global economy, to the national economy, we still have school districts and even private schools who are putting a laptop or an iPad in the hand of every single student in their school when they walk in the door. And nobody's stopping and thinking whether there's any evidence that that improves writing scores and reading scores, if that improves attention span. Does it do anything about the sleep deprivation crisis? So this is where the smartphone numbers that are coming out now, and we can begin to see issues about this in news coverage that doesn't cover the religion angle, but it's, like I say, it's just right there staring you in the face. The minute you just shift your gaze off the technology itself to the content coming through the technology. And at that point, every pastor in our nation should be, in my view, screaming and sounding warning sirens and meeting with parents to discuss how to handle this. And, oh, by the way, if that congregation has a school or is a part of a network related to homeschooling, the educational implications of all this technology is both very positive and very negative. As one homeschooling parent once told me, he said, you know, my family was ready to control television. But when we went into homeschooling, we never thought about the potential for computer addiction and whether or not we could actually control, to use my image from earlier, what comes through the door of that computer, which was at the heart of our homeschooling effort. So even when you try to do something that's kind of as countercultural as homeschooling, you've got to think of the moral implications of that technology. And if you can't, to use your image from Steve Allen, if you can't just turn it off, then what do we do? And that's actually a pretty interesting theological question, because if all of God's creation is both glorious and fallen, the Calvinist image, the ancient church would just simply, this is a matter of how we view creation, that all creation is glorious and fallen, then what's the glorious potential for this technology? Yet at the same time, what is the fallen aspect of the technology that can't be denied as well? The image I've used for years now, I mean, dating back to when I was in classrooms teaching Communications 101 at Christian colleges and universities, I kept saying, the ceiling goes way up. The moral ceiling goes way up, and the floor goes way down. The same technology that allows you to choose a host of absolutely fantastic new forms of documentaries and entertainment and film and podcasting and lots of other things. That same technology that makes it possible to do online seminaries for the underground church in China, if you can find a way to get past the Chinese government barriers over the internet, that same technology has made it possible for the average age of first exposure, often involuntary, first exposure to pornography in our culture is now, you see different polls, somewhere between 8 years of age and 12. Same technology, same theological question, glorious and fallen. So the church at some point has to deal with that technology the way it deals with any other issue in God's creation that has good uses and bad uses of the same item. So it's a very familiar, even ancient, question for the church. Only now it's in everyone's pocket.
Terry, take us into the New York Times covering this as a non-religious issue, of course, about California at least considering the idea of banning the smartphone in school, which is kind of low-hanging fruit.
Well, it's considerably more than just thinking about it. Gavin Newsom has already in the past suggested that this happen. he's made it possible for schools to do it if they choose to do it. And now he's talking openly about a statewide ban on smartphones in schools, or at least smartphones in classrooms. You know, I'm not really anxious to talk about politics, but you do need to stop and think for a second. I mean, can you imagine, with all of the moral, cultural, and religious implications of this, would you have picked California as the first state to go to a ban?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. And so, thus, what's going on here, just politically for a moment? Well, several things are happening. And I, being an old guy, immediately thought of the phrase sister soldier. Do you remember what that refers to?
Vaguely.
Okay, that was when Bill Clinton and what they used to call triangulation. And triangulation was he was finding ways to appear culturally conservative and appeal to conservative parents while not actually getting anywhere near the hottest of the social issues related to abortion, the sexual revolution, etc. And Bill Clinton came out and criticized the rap industry and criticized horrible language in rap music and criticized rap culture. People said if a Republican had done that, they would have immediately heard screams of racism. But in kind of a Nixon goes to China situation, Clinton was able to fly that flag and look like a moderate. And people ever since have called that a sister soldier moment because he attacked a rapper named Sister Soldier. And that was for school uniforms was one of the things they suggested and other forms of school discipline. Well, Newsom could be attempting a sister soldier moment here. And to me, the minute I saw this headline break, I went, maybe this guy is going to end up as the Democratic nominee if Biden actually falls off a stage or something like that. And the story in the New York Times had one laugh-out moment for me when they talked about the negative impact of students, children using social media 3 hours a day. And I laughed at that because nobody thinks the figure is 3 hours a day. Everybody thinks it's closer to five, and it shows up in some polls at 4.8. But Jonathan Haidt has stressed that when you actually analyze the spectrum of smartphones and social media use, you get down to about a 20 to 22%, maybe it was in the teens, but 20% would be close enough. You get down to the intense users. And when asked to describe their use of social media and smartphones, students simply wrote in the blank they were supposed to fill in, constantly. Constantly. I don't even know how to estimate the amount of time that I'm either on social media or it's looming in my mind. If you have, I believe it was Haidt who used a figure that if you have certain programs turned on to alert you to texts, emails, comments on your Instagram, etc., a child in that constant use category could end up having their life interrupted by a buzz on their cell phone somewhere between every 30 and 60 seconds during the hours of the day that they're awake. And then, of course, that requires you to try to figure out how often they're awake when they shouldn't be. Most cyberbullying occurs like in the middle of the night, you know, with children sitting there with their phones either at their bedside or under their pillow. So what is Newsom doing? I think Newsom is trying to say, okay, this is a national problem. I'm going to be brave enough to deal with it. And immediately say, well, won't the Republicans jump on board? Well, the Republicans face a really interesting issue there, which is to what degree do they want to kind of go against their libertarian approach to a lot of issues in economics would Donald Trump, who lately has actually been trying to cozy up and make up some of his lost territory with big tech, and I'm not referring to Elon Musk there, what would Trump do in response to this? The state of Florida has already taken steps toward trying to control smartphones, but a lot of places in America that supposedly have smartphone bans, I was reading a story up in the Midwest from the Midwest about this the other day, in an urban area, I think it was Chicago, might have been Milwaukee, but they have a ban on in certain schools, but they cannot enforce it. Because in a classroom with 20 or 30 kids, what percentage of the time would it take if you don't have a ban on the children having the phones in their pockets at all? If they've got their hands near the phones, you're not going to be able to keep them from using them. So that gets you back to students having to turn the phones in to the school when they walk in the door. Some sort of system where the phones are put away and children can't get to them, even during breaks or alleged playground hours or something like that. Are schools going to face the school discipline issue of we're going to lock the phones up? And it really surprised me that Newsom went straight to that. The New York Times story, with the religion and moral angles are not here, of course, but they also made another really interesting point. California doesn't exactly have a cheery atmosphere in its state legislature. To say that it's fiercely divided on just about anything would be the understatement of the century. The New York Times story noted there has been strong bipartisan support for this bill. And in current day America, if Republicans and Democrats can agree on something like this, an issue with this kind of moral and social connotations, that political issue is going to get on the front burner and stay there.
So not too many days ago, there was an op-ed in the New York Times again, and this is about the other end of the, or the other side of that portal or that door that you're talking about. The Surgeon General calling for warning labels on social media platforms.
On social media products themselves. This was something that I thought the op-ed itself, coming from the Surgeon General, should have received more coverage than it got. And I heard about the op-ed through a piece at the Essential website called After Babel, the obvious allusion to the Tower of Babel, that is run by Jonathan Haidt and his staff. And he pointed this out, and he noted a very important passage in Dr. Murthy's piece for the New York Times that I'm just going to read this to our listeners. One of the most important lessons I learned in medical school was that in an emergency, you don't have the luxury to wait for perfect information. You assess the available facts, you use your best judgment, and you act quickly. The mental health crisis among young people is an emergency. And social media has emerged as an important contributor. And then he gets into the figures about how often it's used. And then he says, it's time to require a Surgeon General's warning label on social media platforms, stating that social media is associated with significant mental health harms for adolescents. I mean, so in this essay, he compares it to seatbelts in automobiles. In other words, you can't put a seatbelt on Instagram. But what could you do to try to raise awareness of this issue and to try to get, he doesn't say it, but I will, parents, pastors, teachers, and counselors to dig into this more? So this Surgeon General article is quite long, and I would suggest it to anyone who is in a Christian think tank, a school, a denomination, people who do conferences on hot topics in life and culture. I think people that need to read this essay, and the fact that, once again, that it's coming through a secular portal doesn't mean that it has fewer religious implications, cultural implications, and absolutely moral connotations in our world today. So, once again, I think the Surgeon General article deserved coverage in and of itself. I'm going to write about it at Rational Sheep. I hope we can get religious people to read the essay and think seriously about it.
So, Terry, tell us about this Substack essay by Emily Harrison.
Well, it's really intriguing, but it's her trying to start a dialogue with Christian parents exactly on this topic. And, of course, that's what I am doing on this issue, but a lot of others at Rational Sheep. And I've been in touch with her, and she said she had seen Rational Sheep, but she has a more specific task that she's going to try to do. And I admit I had to laugh when I read it early in her essay. She says the following: when I started working in the kids and screens field back in 2018, people would look at me like a three-headed monster when I started talking about limiting screen time for my young sons. Now, who are the people looking at her like a three-headed monster if she is a conservative or a Christian parent? I'm assuming she's saying her friends, other moms, maybe people at her church. And there's a kind of the laugh to keep from crying section of this thing when she had to admit that she was using screens exactly as Marie Wynne had described it almost 50 years ago. She was using screens as a babysitter. Let me just read this. When it came time to turn off the television, there was pushback, frustration, and occasionally all-out tantrum. Please, just one more show, Mommy, please. One day things shifted. I clearly remember standing in the living room and thinking, if I don't get a handle on this now, it's only going to get worse. Maybe that was a nudge from the Holy Spirit because I gained a bit of wisdom or experienced a jolt of common sense. I don't know. The negative, prolonged reactions from my sons when I said it was time to turn off the devices was different than when I said it was time to leave the park or take a nap. When it came to screen time, something was always just a little bit off. This is what pushed her into starting a research project on these things, and she began to read several books on the topic. But later in her essay, she raises the question, what resources are out there for Christian parents? And there's a few, and she gives one or two links. But here's the paragraph that you could just hear ringing true for me as a guy who's focusing so much attention in my own life on what I hope will be the return of my Exegete the Culture class at St. Constantine and some associated schools. What will it take to get the church to look at this? She writes, what I have seen in the past 6 years of my work is that there are pastors and teachers speaking and writing thoughtfully about how Christians interact with digital media, but not many of these resources are directed at parents. The books, articles, and podcasts that are directed at parents tend to be about how to limit and control digital media, but not about how to be set apart from the culture. And then here's what really hit me. Even secular culture is now going against culture on this issue, she implies. And then in italics, she adds, Christians, we should have been in this space first. Which leads me to a simple question. I'm not aware of any widespread calls in Christian schools for cell phone bans. I would imagine this is a topic that has come up in the National Network of Christian Classical Education, where my own family is involved in that. I would think their issue would come up. And my own children, my daughter and her husband, who are connected to CRC, are taking a stack of Rational Sheep leaflets to the annual convention of that movement. But if this isn't job one right now, for anyone in our nation that is running a school system with Christian morality, doctrine, and lifestyle involved in it. If this isn't on the desk of those leaders and they're not thinking seriously about how to pull off a radically limited, if not outright ban on cell phone use in schools, in the hallways as well, during lunch hour, on the playgrounds, in the parking lots, anywhere children can get their hands on and sneak in a quick dash of Instagram. I don't know what it's going to take at this point. And I hope that this national discussion, as she put it, gets Christians into this space. And you have to agree with her question, why wasn't the church there already?
Do we need basically a Christian Neil Postman? He, in 1985, wrote this truly prescient book called Amusing Ourselves to Death. I think the subtitle was Public Discourse in the Age of Show Business or something like that. And he warned about the kind of the mentally erosive effects of entertaining ourselves constantly. This has gone to a completely different level. I don't think even Postman could have foreseen what the smartphone would do in terms of the framework he laid out. With about a minute or so, do we need maybe a Christian Postman to go back and rework and walk over that same ground with regard to the smartphone? About a minute.
Well, obviously, the answer there is yes. But I want to give a shout-out here to someone who wrote a good, practical, parent-level book related to this topic a couple of years ago, and that's Andy Crouch of The Wider World of Christianity Today, wrote a little book called The Tech Wise Family. And I have been telling pastors about that in the last couple of years. I did a column about his book a couple of years ago. But isn't it, it's just so ironic that someone like Jonathan Haidt is going to take the lead on this. And I hope the fact that it's an atheist from New York University doesn't turn a lot of seminary leaders, denominational leaders, Christian publishers off from diving on this hand grenade and admitting this is something the church can't ignore, period.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow on Communications and Culture at St. Constantine College in Houston, Texas. He writes Rational Sheep, a Substack newsletter for faith and mass media. He's author of the National On Religion column for the Andrews McMeel Universal Syndicate, and for two decades, he led the GetReligion.org website. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you next week. Thanks for listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly.